All right, well, today is July 10th, and we're here with your accelerator coming from 2 Kings 18 to 20, 2 Chronicles 32, Isaiah 38, and a variety of other little passages that are all about Hezekiah and Isaiah and the interaction that they have with the envoys from a Babylonian king and the Assyrian Empire. Now, at this time, the Assyrian Empire is at the peak of its power and prominence, and the Babylonian Empire is still rising up. They're kind of a shadow underneath the Assyrian Empire at this time. But it's the envoys that from Babylon that come in chapter 20. And almost certainly they would have had to come to Jerusalem during a time of independence. That would be after Hezekiah stopped paying taxes to Assyria, but before Assyria came back to get their revenge. Now, their stated purpose in coming was to inquire about the miraculous cure that Hezekiah had experienced. And since the sign of that cure was the sun's shadow moving backwards on the stairs, maybe they thought, hey, God's done a great miracle. We've got to meet this king that he's done a great miracle for. But it's also very probable that the Babylonians had another agenda as well, that of forming an alliance with Judah, Egypt, and anyone else who would join them against Sennacherib and the Assyrian Empire builders. Now, one question that rises from the text is with reference to Hezekiah's unwise, but otherwise seemingly innocent action of showing everything he had to the Babylonian envoys that provoked such a harsh response from God. It is possible from the accounts in Isaiah and Kings to suggest the idea that Hezekiah wasn't inappropriate, but it was simply creating an opportunity for Isaiah to make an important announcement that after the conclusion of Hezekiah's reign, Judah would fall to her northerly neighbor, that is Assyria, into captivity, the logical candidate as the overlord for the many years. But Babylon was going to be the actual nation that Judah fell to. And so the curse is interesting because it predicts that Babylon, who's not the power player, is going to be the one that will one day rule and defeat Judah, because Babylon was the one that he showed all of the treasure to. Now, this all might work out, except the Chronicles account tells us that God was displeased with Hezekiah for doing this. And the reason for his displeasure was Hezekiah's pride. Now, Hezekiah overall has a wonderful rule. He was the best king Judah ever had, but even righteous kings are susceptible to the sin of pride. After God had miraculously cured Hezekiah and confirmed that healing miracle with one other miracle, the shadow moving backwards, it's quite possible that Hezekiah began to think of himself as somebody that's pretty special in and of himself. God must love me more than everybody else, he might have said, because he's given me 15 extra years to be the ruler of the nation of Judah. Well, the additional flattery that kings always get, plus the flattery of the Babylonians, may have had him get to a place where he just feels like, yeah, I'll strut my stuff, I'll show everything off. And before the Lord, that wasn't pleasing. The book of Chronicles reminds us that the sin of pride is something that's dangerous. If you're somebody who's in a good place right now, if God's blessings are on your life, don't take it for granted and don't pretend that it came only by your own doing. It's the hand of God that's with you, and you need to stay humble before him. Well, the book of Chronicles also reminds us during Hezekiah's reign about some building projects that were put together for the defense of Jerusalem. Old walls were repaired, new walls were built, and extensive work was taken on the water supply system. Now, this is really interesting, because Hezekiah wanted to prepare the city so that if an oncoming army comes in and creates a siege on their city, well, he doesn't want them to have an easy supply of water, so he stops up the springs outside the city and redirects them to come in underneath and inside the city. It is a brilliant military tactic, and archaeologists have done a great deal of investigation into these improvements in the city's defense and found out, in fact, they were true. You can still see many of these improvements in Jerusalem today. Well, next, in chapters 18 and 19, we learn about the wonderful deliverance of Judah out of the hand of Sennacherib, the latest Assyrian despot. Now, those of you who heard the message that we gave related to this, the first message on fear from Isaiah, will remember this story. But for those who may have missed that message, you'll want to hear this section here. Now, I want you to note in this section the intimidation tactics of the field commander. Surrounded by a massive army, this articulate, multilingual spokesperson calls out in Hebrew. And he did that as a way of manipulating the people, because he understands normally negotiations are done in Aramaic, the political ambassador language, but oh no, he wants the people on the wall to hear his taunts. So he taunts them and he threatens them in order to instill fear into their hearts. He casts doubt on the power of Egypt. He casts doubt on their military strategy. He casts doubt on their ability to find horses, even if he gave them chariots. He cast doubt on Hezekiah and his leadership, and most importantly, he cast doubt on their faith in God, saying, "Isn't it God who sent me to come and destroy you anyway?" The goal is to get the people shaking in their boots, and he says, "I want everybody to hear, because if they're going to have to eat their own filth and drink their own urine, they should know about it in advance." And I'm sure the people on the wall are going, "Ew. Like, that whole filth and urine thing does not sound very attractive to me." And so he wanted to intimidate them. But wisely, the people remained silent. Now, Sennacherib, because he wants to defeat the entire city of Jerusalem, and at the same time not let his army have a bunch of guys get killed, he just wants them to give up. So he sends another letter of fear and intimidation. And the essence of the letter is questioning God's authority and power to save. He knows the only one that Hezekiah has to look up to is God, and so he says, "Your God is not going to save you. None of the other gods of any of the other cities saved you. Why would you think that your God is going to save you now?" I want to pause for a minute and tell you just how much hangs in the balance in this moment. Assyria has already defeated the 10 tribes of the northern kingdom of Israel. Assyria has already come in and defeated the 11th tribe, the tribe of Benjamin. Assyria has already come in and defeated every other city of the tribe of Judah. There's only one city left. It's the city of Jerusalem. And the city of Jerusalem has a leader named Hezekiah and a prophet named Isaiah. And that, along with the power of God, is all that's standing between Assyria and the obliteration of the entire nation of Israel and the survival of Israel. So what does King Hezekiah do? Well, I love Isaiah 37:14 that says, he took that scroll that was the letter from the king of Assyria and he spread it out before the Lord. It's a great verse to memorize. He spread it out before the Lord. See, he went and he prayed, and as you read that prayer, one of the things you'll notice is that Hezekiah was a realist. He knew that the Assyrian Empire, they really were the bad boys on the block. He also knew that those other gods from those other cities that he was talking about in that letter, well, they're not real gods. They're just made out of silver and stone and wood. There's no way that they could protect those cities. But then he affirms that you are the living God. You're the one who made the heavens and the earth. You're the one whose hand really can save us, and so I trust in you. And you know what happened the next morning? The Assyrian army wakes up, and there's 185,000 dead soldiers all around the city. All because Hezekiah made the right choice. And this was a turning point for the nation of Judah, because they survived for another 115 years, and they were able to multiply until the Babylonians eventually came in 586 and took them into exile. It was also a turning point for the nation of Assyria, because Assyria, that was at the peak of their power at this point, began their decline after a rinky-dink little city defeated 185,000 soldiers in one night with no battle, no plague, just the angel of the Lord coming in and killing all of that army. So I want to ask you this question. What's bugging you today? What's giving you anxiety? What's keeping you up at night? What's eating your lunch? Because the Bible teaches us that the antidote to fear is simple. It's prayer. That when anxiety goes up, trust goes down. When trust goes up, anxiety goes down. and God wants you to experience His peace. So do what Hezekiah did. Whatever's bothering you, spread it out before the Lord. And maybe one day people will remember you the same way that they remember Hezekiah, where it says, there was no one like him among all the kings of Judah, either by him or after him. What a great tribute to a great king. What a great name, Hezekiah. Maybe after reading this, you'll decide you want to name your next kid Hezekiah, because it's such a great name. Hey, this is Mark Ashton wishing you lots of blessings today, encouraging you to pray for whatever is bringing fear in your life. Spread it out before the Lord.